Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
The Economist.
In London, this is The Economist, and you're listening to Babbage, a weekly conversation on science and technology. I'm Jason Palmer, science correspondent, and joining me are Tom Standage, our deputy editor, and Oliver Morton, our essays and briefings editor. Today we'll be talking about Google open sourcing What Made It Great and the rise and rise of drone footage. Tom, let's turn first to you. I understand that Google has open sourced what it calls TensorFlow. First of all, what's that?
TensorFlow is a machine learning system that's used in many Google products. So if you use something like Google Photos, which has this uncanny ability to find all pictures of your cat or something like that, or if you use any of their speech recognition products or their translation products, or in fact now even their search engine, all of them are using TensorFlow as part of the architecture.
Tom, is that tensor as in the mathematical
ideas,
or tensor as in making me more tense?
No, it's actually about the flow of tensors, which is these mathematical, so you've got scalars, you've got vectors, you've got tensors, and you flow them through these artificial neural networks. And that is the way that an awful lot of these modern machine language systems work. So it's the framework for building and running neural networks that Google uses in a lot of its products. It can be used in a lot of different ways. It can be used to do pattern recognition. It can be used to do deep learning. It can be used to do reinforcement learning, which is an even cleverer kind of learning. And that's what they've open sourced. They've said to the research community, here it is, knock yourself out.
But it would, on first blush, look like they're just giving away the secret sauce. This is the thing that gives them the edge that they have, is it not?
Well, that's what's interesting about this, because it does look odd. Google is generally accepted to be several years ahead of its rivals in this. There are other open source frameworks that do similar things like Torch and Cafe. So why is Google doing this? And the answer is, it's not giving away everything, is one thing. TensorFlow is part of its infrastructure, but it's only open sourced a bunch of tools that run on a single machine, so you wouldn't be able to build a sort of Google rivaling company using this framework. So far, it's just for single machines. Secondly, it's not the only bit of their infrastructure. They use an awful lot of software tools to do an awful lot of different things. This is just that machine learning engine part of it. Thirdly, they're hoping that by open sourcing it, they can benefit in two ways. The first is that the academic community working on machine learning will improve this. It's open source, and they've released it under the Apache 2 license, which means you can basically do whatever you like with it. But they're hoping that they will benefit from having a wider range of the world's best people, the ones they haven't hired yet, working on this software. They also hope that will mean that when they do hire them, they'll be able to come straight into Google. They'll already know how to use the tools. That's going to be an advantage as well. But the main reason they can afford to do this is that Google's advantage does not simply come from having the best software. It comes from having the biggest training set of data. Because they have all of those search queries,
right,
they have an archive of the internet, they can train their machine learning systems to do things because they've got thousands of people, millions, billions of people doing searches, doing voice requests, etc., etc. And that's actually where their competitive advantage lies, not in having just the software. They've also got the advantage that they have these big data centers that they can run this thing on. So if you wanted to compete with Google, you wouldn't just need this software. You would also need their user base and their hardware, which, of course, no one else has.
And you can't run the version of the software that they've open sourced on your own data center, right?
No, at the moment it's single machine only. And so you can do lots of interesting things with it, but you wouldn't be able to build a sort of internet scale.
So am I sort of like buying into... So would I base a small business of my own, or am I a hobbyist who's using this? Obviously, if I'm an academic, I can see why I might want it.
No, this is really for academics. And and maybe some startups might try and build things around it in the hopes of being acquired by Google. And the expectation is that they will actually make a multi-user, sort of cloud-based, multi-machine version of it available eventually. But at the moment... they aren't, they're minimizing their risk by producing this single machine version.
Are there any lessons that they've taken from their open source experience with Android on this?
Android's a bit different because Android was open sourced as a defensive move. So essentially, they wanted to make sure nobody that they disliked ended up controlling mobile operating
nobody
systems.
Nobody that they disliked in Cupertino.
Yes, exactly. or indeed anywhere else in South Korea or anywhere else. They wanted to control that. But also, they wanted to make sure it's referred to as a moat. It's a defensive massive moat because it allows them to deliver their services, search and all the rest of it, to lots and lots of people. So they're not making money from that. And it's a rather different model. I think the analogy really, what's interesting is that the big internet giants, most strikingly Amazon, Google and Facebook, are all running their entire businesses on open source software. And I remember when I covered all of this 15 years ago, you know, there was a serious question about whether open source software was akin to communism. And, you know, Microsoft's bosses most famously spoke out against it. They said companies were mad to use it because some hacker you'd never heard of could have inserted any old code into it. It's now generally recognized that open source software is actually more secure because you've got more people looking at the code. And you've got these three companies running on it. And the reason they can afford to do it, Facebook, like Google, has the massive advantage of its user base and enormous amount of training data. So it can afford to open source a lot of its software or rely on open source software because ultimately its competitive advantage comes from its user base. And in Amazon's case, it runs this massive infrastructure, which it makes available to other people to use. And it also runs it all on open source software. And they have the advantage that they have access to the retailers. They have the network there. And if you wanted to copy Amazon, you could rent lots of computing capacity from them and you could use the same open source software that they use to underpin their architecture, but you wouldn't be able to build those relationships with retailers that they have. So what it's telling you is that for many tech giants, their competitive advantage no longer lies, like it did with Microsoft, say, in their software IP. It's in their intellectual property around the software, and therefore they're much, much keener on open source. But this is easily the most striking example because it's Google open sourcing something that's really very, very close to the sort of core engine that made the company great.
And the Facebook part of this?
Facebook has open sourced some of the things that it's produced. But again, the crucial thing is that they have this advantage in users right, rather than in intellectual property per se.
Moving up the 101 then to San Francisco and to a film festival, not a drone festival, I'm noting. It's called the Flying Robot International Film Festival. But what it's really about is drones. Do you have
This is absolutely a drone film festival. And if you just go to the movies at the moment, you're going to see drone shots all the time. If you watch television, everyone's basically cottoned on to the fact that drones are a new form of camera that can just be anywhere at any time. And so all sorts of things that you used to not do because you would need a helicopter for it or not do because you would need a crane for it, you can now do with a drone. And so in all sorts of commercial and broadcast television, you're seeing drone shots coming in. But it's also interesting that the makers of small independent films are also beginning to see some of the possibilities of this, but as yet not necessarily showing off those possibilities to their fullest.
So it's a gewgaw. It's a bit of fun technology and not yet sort of integrated into the art. Or is that what this festival is trying to show us?
Well, there are various ways you can look at it. I mean, it's when people develop new technical ways of doing things in film, it often looks like a gimmick to begin with, like, you know, things like sound and color. And, of course, 3D
looks like a gimmick, that one.
3D, well, for some things it does, for some things it doesn't. Sometimes the gimmick works and sometimes it doesn't. There are different ways of as people work with these things, they learn different ways of doing it, subtler ways of doing it often. And I think that's what we've got to kind of expect from drones. At the moment, you're using drones to do things you could do otherwise. This is what commercial Hollywood has been largely doing, using drones to do things that they could do otherwise, such as helicopter shots and crane shots, and just doing them in a new, efficient way.
Well, and the indies as well, right? That's the real attraction, is they don't need to hire in the helicopter for the day.
Absolutely. I'm very interested in the way that you may see drones being used to do other things. Like, for instance, I recently saw a very nice piece of drone art, actually in Lincolnshire in England, in which they'd used a drone to do a static panorama standing next to, or flying next to, a beautiful church spire from which a famous 19th century panorama had been sketched and painted. And they were overlaying the drone shot on the past shot and having the past and present flow through. And of course, the fascinating thing being that the spire, this was the spire of Louth, this is a work by a guy called Gary Woods, the spire of Louth Church is the point of view in the 19th century art, and it's the subject of the 20th century art because the drone can stand next to it. And these sort of abilities to, at the moment, drones are very frenetic in filmmaking largely. And the idea of drones as places where you can stop and think, that's a very interesting possibility that I think we'll probably see more of.
We have to talk about selfie drones as well, though, because I'm afraid that's how, you know, the vast majority of drone photography is going to be taking place. It's striking that these industries do seem to be crashing into each other. DJI, the leading Chinese maker of drones, has just taken a stake in Hasselblad, the iconic camera maker. In the other direction, GoPro, which makes cameras, is going to make a drone. It has to, because a lot of people are buying its cameras to put on drones.
And some of the most amazing drone footage is, of course, footage coverage of extreme sports that are done from a close-by following drone.
Exactly. So you could buy these drones to while you're doing something awesome on a surfboard or skiing that just fly along behind you and film you looking epic, or flying along in front of you if you prefer. So this is the sort of direction that photography seems to be going in, and filmmaking is making use of it too. But it's still quite gimmicky, and you know, this is what always happens, that the technology ends up driving the bus, and eventually people will figure out the sort of artistic and appropriate use of this. One more thing to say about this is that if you think that the drone is the sort of evolution of the camera hardware, it's very interesting to see that all of the smarts in these drones are increasingly in the software. So people are buying these flying cameras to take pictures of themselves, and what they want is an easy to use system. So you can, with many of these drones, you can make a kind of virtual rail in the sky that you move the drone along, and you can tell it to do tracking
proper
shots.
Cinematic,
yes,
tracking,
exactly,
shots, right.
So the way you actually program them is not, you know, with a joystick and say fly up, like left down. You say start over there and move along this rail, a virtual rail in the sky, and that, once again, it's because the hardware of the drones is increasingly commoditized, and the smartness is going into the clever software that makes it easy to use them to produce great imagery. And that's where we're going to see more and more of the effort.
Can I already get a drone that will follow me, so like 2 meters behind and 50 centimetres above my Bluetooth headset and something like that?
Yes, you can go on to Kickstarter. There's any number of these things. I'm sure there'll be lots of people will be getting drones for Christmas, and some of them are these follow-you-along drones. And they're getting smaller and smaller as well. I mean, some of them are designed to be sort of pull them out of your pocket, throw them in the air, and they follow you along.
And what about the paparazzi?
Yes, well, it's inevitable that the paparazzi will be flying drones into people's houses as they get smaller and smaller. And America is, particularly behind on making regulations about drones. The interesting exception is it issued one sort of emergency license for inspecting oil pipelines, but all of the other emergency licenses have gone to Hollywood studios for filming, because they are the most immediate users of this technology, and they want to do this instead of hiring expensive helicopters. So we're going to see more and more drone shots in movies and on TV in the future.
No, but really what we're going to see a lot of is better and better drone selfies.
We'll see that too. It's only a matter of time.
Thank you for that, gentlemen. That's all for this episode. You've been listening to Babbage. For more news on science and technology, visit economist.com. In London, this is The Economist.
The Economist.
Hi, this is Janice Torres from Yo Quiero Dinero. From a local business to a global corporation, partnering with Bank of America gives your operation access to exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful, you'll make every move matter. Visit bankofamerica.com/bankingforbusiness to learn more. What would you like the power to do? Bank of America NA, copyright 2024.